Good afternoon, and welcome to Line One, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. The CDC reports that suicide is the third leading cause of death among people ages 10 to 14, and the second leading cause of death for people 15 to 24. According to the 2016 Alaska Youth Risk Behavior Survey, the YBRS, 20% of Alaska teens seriously considered suicide, and almost 11% attempted suicide one or more times in the past year. As alarming as these numbers are, perhaps even more concerning is the fact that after years of decreasing, suicide rates among teens have increased almost 25% over the past 18 years. On today's program, Anchorage School District Prevention Specialist and member of the Alaska Suicide Prevention Council, Julie Vincik, joins us to discuss teen suicide and why the controversy surrounding the new Netflix series 13 Reasons Why. As a bonus today, I'm pleased to also welcome graduating Anchorage High School student Mariah Brone, who has graciously agreed to share some of her own struggles with depression and suicidal thoughts. Thanks to both of you for taking the time to join me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. I want to remind listeners that you can reach us locally by calling 550-8433. Or if you're outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. If you've never emailed us before, you got to spell out line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at alaskapublic.org. If you have a question or comment about today's topic, please give us a call or email us so we can get your question on the air. All right. I guess I want to start off just a little, some introductions. Julie, can you give us a little bit of your background and what you're doing with the school district?
Sure. And thanks for having us on here today, Prentice. I've been a clinical counselor in the Anchorage School District for the past 26 years, having the privilege and honor of working with adolescents in our high schools. I was appointed to the Governor's Statewide Suicide Prevention Council in January. It's made up of dedicated volunteer members from across our state, and our job is to advise the governor and the legislature on issues that are relating to suicide. We work closely with our communities around Alaska, faith-based organizations, public and private entities, and the council works to improve the health and wellness of Alaskans by reducing suicide and its effects on individuals and our communities throughout Alaska.
All right. And Mariah, your addition to this came a little bit after Julie and I had started our conversation. So can you tell us a little bit about how you came to join us and what your thought process or your reasons for coming on today and talk about something that's really personal and I think important for people to hear?
Absolutely. I participated recently in the KCC School Talent Show. And after I shared this poem that I wrote, I decided it would be a good opportunity to expand and share with more people. And it's an issue that I'm really passionate about and that I've thought about a lot because it is close to me. So when Julie approached me with the opportunity to come on the show, I was so excited, and I thought it was a really great opportunity for me.
I had the same response when she called, and she's like, what do you think? Should we have a student on? I was like, yes, please, because it does add so much. Otherwise, it's the adults really kind of talking in a vacuum about things that we think we understand, and we probably have an idea of what's going on to some degree, but not from the perspective of an adolescent in today's society, so appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess let's go ahead and you mentioned the poem and wanting to get some information out and share it, and now you have a bigger stage than the KCC Talent Show to sort of share this information.
Much so bigger, yeah.
If you don't mind sharing that with us, I think that's a good way to start off our show.
Definitely. If you ever ask if you can call me to say goodbye because you've decided you're really gonna kill yourself, yes, call me. I'll answer, but I won't say I forgive you. I won't say I love you one last time. I will not beg you to stay. I won't ask you not to commit suicide, not to leave me behind because I can't live without you. I will not say, think of your family or your friends, and I won't forgive you. You won't leave on good terms with me. But if you let me, I will write you a story of lilac skies and golden sunrises that will get tangled in your hair, making it glow. I will paint you a picture of underwater forests where moss grows on all sides of the trees, and the branches sway gently with the current, and if you make ripples in the surface, it'll look like the leaves are dancing. I will show you how to use the insomnia, to take the deep violet under your eyes and use it as ink to write poems and songs. And I'll take you to museums and concerts and try to help you see that people can create beautiful things, not just tear them apart. But I'll also take you to secondhand stores and show you how to make something good out of things you think nobody wants anymore. I will not try to make you love the life you've been given so you want to keep living, because being okay with that is hard. But if you call me, maybe I can reassure you that happiness is not a decision. Happiness is as hollow as a gutted pumpkin, an artificial, unwavering smile carved up in front, as fragile as a porcelain doll, painted teeth and dull eyes, and not a single ounce of reality. But you do have to decide that you're worth recovery, and that takes time. You're going to relapse, and things are going to get bad all over again, but you will always be learning. You will learn to make something beautiful out of nothing at all. You will take a blank piece of paper and use the ashes from the fire that ravaged your life and use them to draw a portrait of the person you want to build yourself into. You'll draw hopes and dreams and plans, and you'll learn to create things that people will fall in love with and stories they can relate to. You'll learn not to water flowers that are already dead, but instead to plant ivy that will grow and twist and fill the cracks in the charred walls of your heart until that burned-down palace is replaced by nothing but soft leaves and hazy green. People are so often cruel, especially to themselves, but I hope I can help you see that you deserve cities and sunsets and oceans and every lovely thing this world has to offer. I will remind you that there are books you haven't read yet, movies you haven't seen, and songs you haven't heard that will decorate the inside of your mind in such enrapturing ways. There are people you have not met that you will love and who will love you and who will make you laugh until it hurts. You will cultivate each ethereal thought, and one day you'll look back on this moment you feel there's nothing left for you, and you will remember that feeling. And you'll be perfectly content knowing that you made it. You have not yet experienced all the things that can keep you alive. So I can promise that if you ever ask if you can call me to say goodbye, the answer will be yes. Without hesitation, without resentment, yes. Please, call me, but I won't say goodbye.
Okay. Yeah, I got goosebumps. And we should end the show now.
That's incredible.
That's remarkable.
Thank you.
Incredible.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. What was it like writing that and then sharing that with other people?
Writing it, I was in a much better place than I have been at other points. But I wasn't in recovery, but I was looking towards it. So I was starting to learn that there are other options, there are other ways that I can cope, instead of romanticizing the idea of disappearing in my head. And then sharing it was terrifying because it is such a personal thing for me, and like my poetry is so close to my heart, and I don't share it with a lot of people, but I understand the fact that being open about it can draw other people into receiving help if they need it. So I thought it was a good idea to share that.
Yeah, one of the biggest problems that we face is the stigma that's associated with suicide, especially. There is a belief, and I think a very strong truth to the fact that suicides are underreported.
Definitely.
And you know, it's often parents don't want to talk about that afterwards, and kids don't want to talk about it. And I think that's why this is so important. Julie, I guess we have to include you, but I could.
I think we just go with Mariah over here. I'll tell you,
I know, it was pretty amazing. I have so many questions.
The first time that we heard Mariah recite this poem at KCC, there was probably 75 people in the audience, and it was just. It just went silent. People were just stunned at not only the beauty, but not often are writings about suicide and darkness hopeful.
Yeah.
And it was just so beautifully done and continues to be an inspiration every time we hear it. So thank you, Mariah.
Thank you.
Let's take a minute to talk about the scope. I mentioned some numbers at the beginning that are shocking. Every time I read them, 20% of our kids, and if you do the math, which I'm not very good at, that's 2 out of every 10. And think seriously about suicide, and 11% almost attempt suicide, and those are big numbers. So can you talk about the scope of the problem? It's worse in villages. And
sure. Well, you know, Alaska is such a huge state, and it brings about its own complexities geographically. And what we know about Alaska is, using the source from Alaska Bureau of Vital Statistics, Alaska does have one of the highest suicide rates per capita in our country. It's compounded by the fact, I think, that in a lot of our rural areas, I myself grew up, was born and raised in Nome. I think it's far more prevalent in areas where there is a lot of trauma, of isolation, of darkness, of many things combined. And I am absolutely no expert at all in the field, but just sharing my experiences, having grown up in Nome, having several friends in high school that took their own lives, and then being a clinical counselor for as long as I have, you know, it's... Alaska, it's not a number that we're proud to have by any means, but I think we're doing a great deal to work on this problem. I know that in 2015, one of the last surveys we had done, Alaska's rate was 27 suicides per 100,000 people. We had 1,597 suicides between 2006 and 2015, which is an average of 159 deaths by suicide in Alaska each year. And I look at that, I grew up 9 through 12 in my high school. That was my high school, 150, 175 students. So
right.
It's like seeing an entire high school gone in a year. One thing we do know is that more than 90% of the people who die by suicide have depression or another diagnosable, treatable, and I emphasize treatable, mental or substance abuse disorder, and that's according to the American Association of Suicidology. So it is prevalent, and Alaska has its own unique challenges around this issue, for sure.
What are the other 10%? Does anybody know? That just jumps out at me. I always hear 90% of people who commit suicide have some mental health issue.
Sure.
What are the other 10%?
And I think that's always hard to know, because one of the things we know with suicide, right, is that people often take those answers with them. We don't always know. But I think other issues, whether it's a copycat situation, which we've had, or maybe it's something that we initially looked at as an accident, but maybe there was some intent. I don't know that we'll ever really know what the other 10% is about. I think there's probably many answers to that.
Maybe some medical conditions that people decide.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That certainly is one.
Sure.
It just always struck me. I was like, seems like anybody who is at a point in their life where they're going to end it or thinking seriously about end it, there seems to be something that is tormenting them to the point where, to say it's a mental health problem would be accurate. It's also, I think, something that people who, it's hard to understand. And the hopelessness, I think, and that sense of, because suicide, it seems like, they call it a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Correct.
But it doesn't feel temporary to people who have reported attempting or who have attempted suicide and then talked about it later.
Exactly. Mariah and I were just talking earlier today about the fact that, you know, so many people who find themselves in that situation just really want the pain and the darkness as they know it right now to end. And it's not necessarily mm-hmm. even that they want to be gone from this world forever, but it's just put a stop to how I'm feeling right now. And I think that's why it's so critical that we're hooking people up with the right resources and intervention to get them on the other side of that, get through that part of it.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. For those you might be tuning in late, my guests today are Anchorage High School graduating. I guess I was going to say, I wrote rising senior,
yeah.
but you're not. You're graduating.
Yeah.
Mariah Bronet, an Anchorage School District Prevention Specialist and member of the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, Julie Vincic. Today we are discussing teen suicide prevention. And in the second half of our show, we're going to look at the controversy surrounding the new TV series 13 Reasons Why. If you have a question for our guests or a comment or a story or an experience you want to share with us, please call and add to the show. You can reach us in three ways. Our local phone number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You mentioned right before I gave out the numbers that there was getting people hooked up with the right resources and getting the word out. So what is the council doing to raise awareness and to get the word out about teen suicide and the scope of this problem and raising our community's consciousness?
Sure. Well, I think the most important thing is the council is really supporting and endorsing communities talking, just getting this issue out there where, you know, villages, communities, cities, towns, that we're all talking about this issue and don't continue to kind of keep it a mystery or to have a taboo on talking about it. It is a myth that talking about it increases the incidence of it. So we know that as soon as young people and adults alike are communicating about this, that through that there's opportunity to say, then we feel safe saying, yeah. gee, you know, I'm not feeling so great here, or, you know, is there somebody that I can talk to? There's really, you know, great power in communicating about this issue, kind of taking that veil off of it. I think the council has done a lot of support throughout Alaska, through grants, through resources, and kind of trying to empower each of our communities to address it in their own significant way. I mean, for us in Anchorage, that might look very different than it would in Nome or in
right.
Hooper Bay or in any of other smaller areas. So to really allow people and cultures to be able to address it in the way in which they feel is most beneficial is imperative. And the council supports that greatly.
Mariah, from your experience, you spent 4 years in the Anchorage School District. What have you seen in the schools as far as what they're doing to try to raise awareness or talk to you guys about these feelings and instances? And what's your perspective on how that works?
I was actually with a charter school, so I didn't have the same kind of school structure.
Okay.
But I can tell you that I never really hear about I never hear about school-wide unless there's been an incident recently.
Right.
I never hear about suicide prevention in schools. It's so isolated to immediate situations. And even then, they're just memorials, or they're not preventative. They're looking backwards, and it's difficult to see.
I know we're going to talk about 13 Reasons Why at the end, but they
mm-hmm.
did a really good job of depicting that.
Yeah.
The kids saying, where were all these signs before? Hannah died.
Yeah.
And, you know,
they did
all
a really good job of that.
The meetings and things. So we'll get into that a little bit more. But I think it's what is the school doing in listening to Mariah? Are they having conversations regularly? Are there classes? Are there assemblies? Like, what's the... Because, yeah, we don't want to react. It's too late.
Right. And actually, yeah, I think there is a great deal that we're doing in our schools. So many people have mobilized around this issue from my perspective, especially at the high school level. A lot of great efforts have been made. Peer education is one thing that we know works when peers are teaching peers, giving them the information. Obviously, we're more likely to listen to a peer than we are to listen to somebody like you and I, Prentice, yakking all the time, right? So we've got, you know, groups that are addressing bullying. We've got groups like Be the Change and Change of Heart. We'll have a new program coming into our schools called Capturing Kids' Hearts. But it's more looking at the notion that everybody has a story. We all carry that story every day, and we're not privileged enough to know what other people are carrying. So every interaction we have either contributes to that story in a negative way or a positive way, and building that awareness and then going the next step and saying, so if you are feeling this way, if you are having the struggles, what's the next piece? What do we do? Who do we go to? What are our resources? And making sure we're connecting the dots for our young people.
If the school has if a concern is brought to a teacher or a counselor about a kid, what is the procedure for reaching out, or how do you intervene? How do you make that known to assure their safety? And I know you want kids to come to talk to you, and if they feel like anything they say is going to be told to their parents, they're less inclined. So that's a tough spot. For a counselor or a teacher. So how do y'all intervene?
Yeah, it can be a tough spot, but I can tell you that, and we have some incredibly dedicated people in speaking for the Anchorage School District, counselors and teachers that I've worked with for 26 years, and always, always at the end of the day, staff member wants to see our kids safe and here, alive. Usually how it works, I mean, our teachers and staff are seeing students 5 days a week, 7 hours a day, and building those relationships and connections, it stands to reason that our students are going to be disclosing quite often to school staff. And usually how the event works is that if a student were to share something with the teacher would bring that student down to a counselor or nurse in our schools, and we would just begin the process of kind of talking to them, assessing a little bit about immediate danger and their risk. And if a student is disclosing suicidal ideation, thoughts, harm to self, at that time, we need to bring in the parents. The parents need to be notified. And how we do it is, I'm very fortunate to work with a pretty incredible staff, student service staff over at King Career Center. And we always, when we are looking at a student who may be struggling with suicidal thoughts, we always bring in a second team member. The reason for that is to have an extra set of ears and eyes on that. And then we bring the parents in. And our usual recommendation, if a student is an immediate threat, is for the parents then to take them immediately to an assessment and get checked out by a counselor or therapist. A good assessment for that.
How do you handle it if a student comes to you about another student?
Definitely.
That's a tricky one.
Tricky and not tricky. Tricky in that it's hard for that student, but any adult is going to react on that very quickly. I just want to put out there that I know there's been kind of a misnomer about a lot of our young people don't want to, tell on a friend or to betray that trust. But really what we have found is quite the contrary. Our young people are smart people, and they're very compassionate, and they're very concerned about their peers. And I would say that 8 times out of 10, when I'm dealing with an intervention, it's been brought to my attention by a friend of that person who's struggling. And, you just don't see young people hesitate much anymore. They've just seen too much of the other side.
Right.
And they bring that forward. And I have never had a problem with saying to somebody, your friend really cares about you, and they care about you so much that they wanted us to talk with you and find out what's going on and how you're doing and how we can help. And to be cared about and loved like that is such a great gift. And so most of the time, they're shocked to find out that somebody thinks enough of them that they're going to make sure they get the help they need.
Mariah, do you have any experience with that question or with that situation?
I do, actually. A lot of times, since I am so open about my own experiences, people come to me with theirs. And then a while back, I had a friend come to me, and she, every time she would talk to me, she would swear me to secrecy, and you're not allowed to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to come to a point of understanding that it wasn't safe for that person, and it also wasn't healthy for me trying to keep that secret and keep, if something did happen to her, then I would have to live with that. I would, and that would really affect me, and that sounds selfish, but you really do have to look out not only for the people that you care about, but you have to take care of yourself too. So then bringing in someone that you trust and who actually has authority and bringing a person like that in and explaining to your peer that why you did that, it's really important to be able to do that and recognize when it's necessary.
Now, if you have been sworn to secrecy, which is a tough one because you've got to promise not to tell anybody, can kids make anonymous? Can they go to a counselor and say, I don't want you to bring up my name, but so-and-so is really struggling and I'm worried they might hurt themselves?
Sure, you can. And we have students that do that for a variety of reasons. And again, I very seldom, when I would say to a student, you have a friend that's really concerned about you, almost never does the friend say, who is it? What's their name? They just have this, I think, sense of relief that somebody has them on the radar and somebody is addressing this. They know. I think most people intuitively know when they're in a dark place that I can't go this alone. And, we have, Mariah and I were talking about this again today, that, if a person is really determined to end their life, the one thing that they will not do is to share those thoughts with somebody, because they know somebody will undoubtedly intervene. So we tell our young people, if someone is sharing that with you, there's a part of them that's just kind of like you're the lifeline in hopes that you will do what they cannot do for themselves right now. So,
absolutely.
That's a really important message, and I want to add to that in that I've had a lot of young people who have been in that situation.
Sure.
And who have either both told an adult about a friend or had a friend tell an adult about them. And not one of them have ever held a grudge. Not one of them has, either way, has been angry at the end, because it is ultimately a sign of care and love to say, I don't want you to die.
Absolutely. And Prentice, I have, 26 years in the school district and 35 as a clinician. I have yet to have anybody, whether it's a teenager or an adult, come back angry, because the message really is, I would rather you be angry at me than be dead. And I think we need to really remember that. Most people find a sense of relief when somebody steps in at a time like that, even though they may not initially see it as that, they do later on.
Yeah. And that was depicted in the show, 13 Reasons, where mm-hmm. she oftentimes, when she was looking back and talking about it, she said, I want them to stop me. I want them to
come after
to
me.
Talk to me, to say no.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
All right. I have a couple of emails I want to read real quick while they're coming in. So we got quite a few of them. The first one is just, wow, that cut to the soul. What an epic poem. Carry on with that amazing talent.
Oh, yay. Thank you.
That is not a surprise. Here's another one. My teenage son, 13, who is not depressed and rather happy-go-lucky, has attempted suicide twice. Both times his doses have been sublethal. Window cleaner and then bleach. Both times it was because he did not get something he wanted or was losing something for which he cared very much. Is there a place in Alaska that works on skills to improve communication and negotiations in disappointed, frustrated youth? There are no alcohol or depression issues.
Okay. Well, you know, I just like to comment on that. And again, not knowing the young man or knowing the family, there's usually a lot of complexities around every situation that we're not aware of. I would say that no matter what's going on, a person's reality and their perception at that time is what they operate off of. So while may others might not see it as, well, wasn't that big of a deal, there wasn't that much going on in their life, or it didn't seem like there was that much going on in their life, that would be really very critical for that young man to be seeing a good counselor that can kind of sift through and maybe filter out any other issues that maybe family or friends aren't aware of. Because to me, at the very least, that's real clear communication that something's not right for them.
Something's not right. And it ties into that boys account for about 75% of successful suicide attempts or suicides. But they commit or they attempt suicide at a much lower rate than females.
Right. So, yeah, so definitely what we know statistically is males have more completions and females have more attempts. And, you know, there's probably various reasons for that. The number one reason is that males tend to use a more lethal means for that. The other reason would be that if a female is not using a lethal means, there's more opportunity for intervention there. So not so much when it's a lethal.
All right. We have a phone call. Craig, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
I got to say right off again, that was an amazing poem, and I would love to read it or hear it again. I'm going to listen again tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for that. I was going to bring up the topic of emotional hygiene because, you know, as little as 100 years ago, we started practicing personal hygiene, like, you know, commonly, and our life expectancy jumped over 25% in a matter of just 20 years. And so if it was a common practice for all of us to practice emotional hygiene, there it is to each of us. You know, our well-being and value of life could jump at least like 25% or more. And that's about all I wanted to say. Like, I'm working on the same things that you guys are, but I focus on the positive, and that's all you can do.
I love that term, Craig, emotional hygiene. I think that leaves us with a nice visual. I mean, we probably went...
That's exactly what I was... Yeah, I had to make the comparison. All right, thank you. I'll let you get back to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
Appreciate your comments.
Thanks, Craig. Yeah, that's emotional hygiene, sleep hygiene, personal hygiene.
Yeah.
I even call it technology hygiene, like the responsible care of anything. Sleep hygiene is so important, and emotional hygiene, which is really taking care of yourself emotionally, talking about things, cleaning out the mess when it's dirty.
Yeah.
As far as this, you know, this 13-year-old girl, the email that young man is obviously very emotionally intense and acting out and not getting his way. He wants to display his anger at that situation, and he doesn't know how to do it otherwise. So getting him in with a counselor is really, really important. But emotional hygiene is about examining yourself and coming to terms with what you're struggling with. And have you heard that term before, Mariah?
I haven't heard that specific term, but the idea around it is something that I'm really familiar with, and I'm working more personally. Like, that's something that I really work for, is examining my own life and where I am mentally and if I'm prepared for a situation or if it were to happen. So going through hypotheticals and just making sure that I am stable enough to deal with them.
All right, we're at the halfway point in our show, so we're going to go ahead and take our 30-minute break. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on KSKA Anchorage. My guests today are Anchorage graduating student Mariah Brone, and Anchorage School District Prevention Specialist and member of the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council, Julie Vincik. Today, we're discussing teen suicide prevention and looking at the controversy surrounding the new TV series, 13 Reasons Why. If you have a question for our guests or an experience you want to share about today's topic, you can reach us in three ways. Our local phone number is 550-8433. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we'll return to our conversation. I'm Prentice Pemberton.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line 1, your health connection on KSK Anchorage. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, today's guests are Lori Vincic from the Anchorage School District and Mariah Brone. Julie, what did I say?
Lori, but hey, I like Lori.
My last guest was Lori, and that's why I paused there because I did not edit this. Julie Vincic. Mariah Brone, who's a 17-year-old graduating senior and has taken the time to share with us her story and an amazing poem. If you missed it, you can listen tonight and hear that again. And we just she just offered to put it on the website because somebody mentioned that they wanted to read it again. So we'll have that added to the website. I want to remind folks to go ahead and call in if you got questions. Call in the next 10 minutes or 15 minutes because we'll run out of time at the end. I always get a bunch of calls at the end and we can't get you on. So our local phone number is 550-8433, or you can reach us toll free at 1-888-353-5752. The last way is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. All right. Well, this weekend I binged watched 13 Reasons. I have to admit I got through like 8 of them and then had to skip to the last two to kind of get to the meat of it and figure out what happened. But the thing that jumped out at me, and I'm going to ask you guys what your thoughts are on it, but the thing that jumped out at me right away was that every single thing that happened to Hannah in this series has come across in my office. Very similar circumstances, very real. Pictures being spread around, the scene where she's walking through the school and everybody's on their phone and laughing and whispering and pointing. That's happened in my office 5 or 6 times recently. The other thing that really jumped out at me is that social media certainly doesn't help this. That kids, a lot of time, young people don't know the limits and the boundaries, which goes into a lot of stuff I talk about with electronics. So let's talk just a minute about 13 Reasons Why. Mariah, maybe you can explain to folks what that's about for listeners who don't know what it is.
The show is, it starts out with a school and how it's affected by one girl's suicide. And then it continues on with tapes that she recorded and left for the people who affected her life in a negative way, for them to listen to, and then about how they're dealing with her suicide and how she how they affected her into committing suicide.
You mentioned it was this thing sort of. I hadn't heard about it until like two young ladies that I work with came into my office, and one had been cutting on herself, and she said, I said, what's been happening that like has caused this? You haven't done this in like 6 months. And she's like, I don't know. And then she said, well, maybe I did watch that 13 Reasons Why like last night for like 12 hours. And I was like, what is that? And then she told me. So it was, you mentioned it was started by Selena Gomez, and it's sort of spread among the teenagers before the adults even knew really what it was.
Yeah, even before it was released, there was a lot of there was a lot of talk about it, especially on social media. People were really excited about it, and they were excited that it was a topic that wasn't usually talked about. So there was a lot of following based on that.
So the adults that I've heard from in this, the teenagers are all like, wow, it's amazing, and it's so powerful, and it is powerful, and it is intense, and it's disturbing in some ways. And I think it's also really accurate in a lot of ways. As I said, all these things happen, and they, you know, what's the problem, Julie, that the adults, the counselors, everybody's up in arms about?
Sure. Well, I think one thing that I would like to say is that even though a lot of the adults and counselors and parents are up in arms about it, a lot of our young people are up in arms about it, just so you know. They've come in and they've talked to us, and Mariah's one of them, and saying, you know, this was depicted in a very romanticized, a very glorified way, and that there were many, many elements, I think, in the series that probably could have been done differently to better represent maybe more students coming forward that we normally see in the schools, or counselors or teachers that intervene earlier that we see so often in the school. So to keep in mind, I think it's a very narrow snippet of how one episode or one series has decided to deal with this. I think part of what's got people up in arms is, first and foremost, the series came out and all episodes were released at one time. So you have 13 episodes. You start off the series by a young woman taking her own life in high school. So the end is the beginning. So already it sets up the notion that, okay, here's the answer. You know, you take your own life, and then we're going to work backwards and look at life. So we didn't get a chance early on to see intervention, to see help, to see some of the strategies that are used to help young people before they get to that point. The other piece is that when all 13 episodes were released at one time, a person could feasibly sit down and do a, you know, 13 Reasons Why marathon over a weekend and just dump and overload this information, much of which is very difficult to process and filter out by themselves for a weekend, and then try to make sense of all that. Whereas miniseries, you know, you watch a movie or a series on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, and you know you're not going to see the next one till the following Tuesday at 8 o'clock. You have a lot of time, you know, to talk with friends, colleagues, process things. But this really eliminated that opportunity happening for a lot of people. And for me, as a counselor and as a parent of two daughters, I can tell you my greatest concern was for young people who might be struggling with some of these issues themselves, watching those episodes by themselves, having absolutely nobody to process that with, to talk about what did you see, what did you feel, what do you think? And they're left alone caring. I mean, I know for me as an adult and a counselor, I walked away from that episode going, holy cow, where do I begin, you know, to even begin to talk about this or to process it? So it's heavy. It's very, very heavy. Now, that being said, I would be the first one to say that the answer is not to say, don't let your kids watch it. We know our young people are watching it. In fact, it was a book written in 2007. We hardly heard anything about it, but Now we've heard a lot through this. So, you know, my recommendation is, parents, if your kids are going to watch it, watch it with them. And if that is uncomfortable for your kids, make sure somebody who's an adult or somebody that can process that with them is sitting with them. And then follow up, have the conversations. You know, what did you see? What did you hear? What do you think about that? Did that seem real? Did they do everything that they could do? Really ask the hard questions. And how are you feeling? Have you ever felt that way? I think is a very important part of the conversation for our parents to be having, or any adult to be having with our young people. But so there is the side of it that can open up some pretty great conversation, I think, but there was, I think, definitely a lack of responsibility in how it was released, and the fact that there was very little follow-up after each episode. I kept waiting for, you know, if this is happening to you, these are the numbers you can call, the helpline, the support line, see a counselor, talk to a parent, talk to an adult. But wow, if you were somebody struggling with that and watch those episodes, you'd be put in a pretty dangerous position, I think.
It is really hard to watch.
They have recently added a disclaimer and a little blurb at the end that says you can go to 13reasonswhy.info to get some information that sends you to the crisis line, and that's it. But then none of that was there at the beginning.
Right. None of that was there. And I think, well, I'm glad it's there. I mean, that was clearly a response to many organizations, school counselors, American Psychological Group, saying, hey, you can't, that's irresponsible. You can't leave that like that. So I think they rallied and did what they needed to do. But
yeah, you can't just throw that out there.
Right, right.
I have a long email. I'm not going to read it all, but I do want to read part of it. After watching 13 Reasons, I think one of the things that has parents, teachers, and others so upset is that they are depicted as completely clueless, which is how I remember them from my own hellish teen years. Mm-hmm. High school has not changed from 40 years ago. A savage crucible of competition, grades, and test scores, looks, cars, money, violent sports, which breeds a violent hierarchy, and add to that media overload, and high school is what it ever was. Awful. Winners and losers with nothing in between. Mm-hmm. Mariah, I guess. That person,
what do you think, Mariah?
That person went to school 40 years ago, yeah. And so did I.
Well, it has changed over years. I think a lot of things are the same way. There is a distinct hierarchy, and if you're not at the very top, you're vulnerable to so much bullying, and like you're a target for so many people. And I think that in large part, the adults that we come into contact with, they are clueless, partly because they don't have the same perspective as we do. They've had time to process their own teen years, so now they have a different view of how things should be dealt with. But when you're in those situations, you don't have that kind of perspective. And I think it's really important for adults to understand that we don't process the same way. We haven't had the same experience. We haven't done this before. So now we have to try to work from scratch, and we can't be expected to understand how.
Yeah, one of the biggest differences is the social media element and the speed at which stuff spreads, mm-hmm. and the ability to insult in groups anonymously,
right.
and without face-to-face.
Right. It's crazy.
When I was in high school, we had to talk to somebody's face. We had to tell them, or you just made a comment under your breath. But I had a young lady whose boyfriend shared a picture with a bunch of his friends, and then it spread mm-hmm. all over the school. And that mm-hmm. that scene in 13 Reasons Why, where she's walking through the school and the yeah. ding, 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 that's a real thing. That's not sensationalized
right.
at all.
Yeah,
right. That definitely is real. And I think, you know, one of the things we've seen is the incidences of our young people suffering from anxiety. It's just gone through the roof in the last couple of years. And,
definitely.
You know, a lot of things mm-hmm. that point to that would be this social media. It's just amplified. You know, we talked earlier when the show was starting off about how so many people, young people especially, are getting their feedback, you know, via
right.
Snapchat or Instagram or Facebook. How many likes did I get? You know, how come everybody's at the gathering on Tuesday night? I don't see myself there. What's wrong with me? And the anxiety of this immediate gratification off of our phones. I mean, we're all guilty of that, not just young people, adults probably even more so. So it fuels that anxiety of, am I good enough? How do I see myself? Do other people like me? And we're constantly measuring ourselves to that. And it's too much anxiety for anybody.
Yeah, and the young woman that I was talking about did not tell anybody for almost an entire year, and got to my office because parents just didn't know what was going on. And once that came out, but then what do you do with it? And mm-hmm. It's very, very complicated. But the movie or the show, I think, depicted the situations pretty accurately. And adults, I don't think really know. Kids are keeping this stuff secret, and they're talking amongst themselves. The bullying stuff is just not, the jocks and the popular girls walking through the school, kind of running and pushing people, and that's all real.
Yeah.
And the nerds or the freaks or the emos or the people that don't fit in there are off on the side and feeling alone.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to make one comment, and I didn't get to address it when we were talking about what schools are doing. We know those groups exist. I mean, they have forever. Yeah. They did 40 years ago. They do today. They will, 20 years from now. I think partially what is different is that our young people in the high schools have really been empowered to come up with ways that address this. And I mean, right here in our own Anchorage School District, I think of a group. I think we have one at Service. We have one at West. The You Are Not Alone students that are trained to go out and talk to other students, give presentations, and, talk about these issues. And I think people, our young people often get a bad rap, but so many of them are doing good. I look at Mariah here. I mean, the courage it takes to not only share that poem in public, but to talk about her own life in hopes that, other people will look at her and go, I'm not alone. There's somebody else. And look at how she's gotten through
so
it.
So important.
How
yeah.
hopeful that yeah. is. So a lot of our young people doing the right thing and good things. We just don't recognize that enough, I don't think.
Yeah. I don't think we were... the 13 Reasons really depicted the adults as they tried, they asked questions, they looked, and the kids said no. There's only so much you can do as
yeah,
a parent
definitely.
To
right.
ask and to say, please talk to me, and you have to trust that your kids will. But we all know that the most important influence in a teenager's life is their peers.
You bet.
It is not their parents.
You
that
bet.
Ends about 12.
Yeah. You bet.
No. Okay. I want to get to, we have a caller who's been waiting
sure.
for a little while. JR, you're on line one. Go ahead.
I haven't seen those shows, but it sounds like y'all might be like the drug counselors or something, and y'all were talking about drug use. And I think that I'd like to talk to y'all about the whole drug, the war for drugs is monstrous. It's genocidal. 33,000 opioid deaths a year. And if drugs were legal, there'd probably just be a few opioids. I don't know if you know the history, but they used to get opium. It was legal in Britain for hundreds of years. They get it from Turkey. It was like 10% morphine, and they isolated the molecule in the 1880s. But anyway, so it being illegal, it's concentrated to be smuggled in, the most. Highest concentration. So if it's legal, I think there'd just be very few. Nobody would even start injecting because that's so demeaning to yourself. And, the rhetoric, I don't know what was this girl in the movie or something was talking about turning her friend in. I mean, what is it, the Hitler Youth? Some of the foolish rhetoric.
All right, JR, I gotta stop you there. I'm sorry. We're that opiate, that's an important conversation, and I think we've done a good job on public media. If you want to go ahead and look up opiate addiction on Alaska Public Media, you just put in the word opiates, and there's like 7 or 8 shows on that very topic. So I'd love for you to go ahead and look at that and do. That's an important point because drugs do play a factor in suicide, and most teenagers, most suicides have some. Is that accurate to say most? Or
yes, that would be accurate. Under the influence.
Under the
time.
Influence, and especially males, that impulsive. It sort of reduces our impulse control, and we act out. So, thanks for the call. Sorry to cut you off, but that. Was a different topic and one that I think we've covered pretty well. All right. So I guess I kind of got thrown for a loop there with the opiate conversation. But does the show, you think, Mariah, do you think from the kids' perspective it was pretty accurate depiction of the things you guys are struggling with?
I think it was on some level.
All mushed into one girl?
Yeah. A lot of the things like... I don't think that most people would experience all of those so quickly, but those are things that we have some experience, at least, whether we've seen it happen to a friend or we've experienced it ourselves, we have some understanding about those situations, and we all know that they exist, and they were depicted in, like, how heart-wrenching it is when you have some part of your life exposed that you weren't ready to have. Like when her poem was shared without without her saying it was okay. That's just, right. It's difficult. And I think that was really accurate.
Yeah, it's a violation.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I would like to add to that and looking at this series is that one of the things that happened were clearly 13 people were singled out and kind of blamed, for lack of a better word,
right.
For her taking her life. And I think what happens, I mean, I kind of look at that as more like revenge, even though I think it is incredibly important for people to understand their parts. And, you know, when we don't treat somebody well or we're teasing or we're bullying, we've got to be accountable for that. The problem, I think, with how the series ended with the 13 tapes is that what it doesn't allow for are human beings make mistakes. And we learn, especially at adolescence, we learn sometimes very hard ways, that it didn't give any opportunity for people to redeem themselves, to say, okay, right. I've learned, oh my gosh, I didn't realize this impacted somebody's life like that. I'm going to do better. I can be better. I'm going to have somebody help me with some skills to get better. And so instead it left 13 people with this incredible, heavy burden, guilt, and I don't know that anybody could ever get out from under that if you're carrying that for the rest of your life. So that bothered me because I think that that does happen. I think by nature people blame themselves anyway when something bad happens to somebody close to them. And then to put that other added piece on there where yeah. the message really was, okay, you're one of the reasons I took my life. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm very cautious of sending that kind of message out to people where this is such a complicated and emotional issue anyway. And then to put that on them, I think, was not the best way to go about it.
Mm-hmm. I wish we had more time. Mariah, would you kind of give us something like teenagers? Do you have a message for kids who are struggling with depression or suicidal thoughts, what they might do?
I'd say just don't keep it to yourself. One of the, you know, most dangerous things you can do for yourself is, you know, not talk to anyone. So whether it's a friend you confide in who, you know, goes and finds you help if you can't talk to someone yourself, or if you do go straight to your parent or your counselor or a family friend, then just find someone you can confide in.
All right. Thank you, Mariah, for joining us today. It was a much better show with you here.
Thank Absolutely. You for having me.
And Julie, thank you as well.
You're welcome, Prentice.
All right. Thanks again to both of you for being here. I enjoyed the conversation very much. We have a variety of links and information about today's topic on our show page. Just go to alaskapublic.org. And you can find the link for line one. Speech, language, and swallowing disorders result from a variety of causes, including brain injury, hearing loss, developmental delay, cleft palate, or emotional issues. On next week's program, Dr. Thad Woodard discusses the work of speech-language pathologists. That's Monday, May 22nd at 2 p.m., repeating the same night at 8 p.m. Eric Bork handled the web editing for today's program, and Dave Waldron was our audio engineer. For all of us at Line One, thanks for taking the time to join us. I'm Prentice Pemberton, and have a great day.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.